It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. You know, you never realize how many people listen to your podcast until people reach out to you privately, individually, telling you how crap your audio was the last time. So, yeah, I realize that that we had some issues with my audio, which normally doesn't happen, but I've corrected it and it's fixed. And it was a pain in the butt to have to try and fix it in post-production because I couldn't really. I jacked my audio way up, but then all of my auto-leveling stuff wanted to jack you guys way up so that you sounded even louder than me. So it was just a mess. But we're good. We're back. Everything's rocking and rolling this week, hopefully.
Just glad it wasn't me.
This is one of two nerd Christmas events we get every year. The first being the iPhone, which, you know, that's always a great thing. But that doesn't happen until September, so we got so many great new announcements this week of what's coming up because, of course, WWDC happened. And we found out all about iOS 13 and watchOS 6 and tvOS 13 and iPadOS. So since we have a lot to cover, we won't have a lot of jibber-jabber, and we'll just jump right into it. How does that sound, guys?
Yep, that keynote was nuts. Over 2 hours.
Yeah, it was a pretty good keynote, and a lot of things, you know, there's some things that I wish they had left out just in terms of brevity, because they did talk about the new TV show coming in the fall from Ron Moore, who's the guy who created Battlestar Galactica, and that's great, it's wonderful, I'm excited about it, but not really a good thing for a developer conference. I wish they had just gotten to the meat of it and just sort of jumped into, because again, we can't subscribe to the service, we don't know any details about the service. They keep teasing it and talking about it without any of the stuff that you really need to know, so.
I wonder if they're going to have to start doing a separate type of keynote series where they announce new media, you know, new shows that they're going to release in the next year or some such, or if they'll just do it through the normal means of, say, ads in the first 30 seconds of a show or something, sort of like Netflix or Hulu does.
That's a great question. And, you know, the other networks, even things like Netflix and Hulu, well, I know Hulu does it, the upfronts that they have every year, where TV networks announce their new shows for the fall and whatnot, even though they're releasing shows all the time. I don't think Netflix does it, but I know Hulu does. But I would hope they would, because this is becoming sort of distracting. Like, stop talking about something that we can't even buy or get and have no pricing on. So
I can see why Hulu would do it, but, you know, Netflix is so prolific in their new releases. I mean, they release new stuff every Friday. I mean,
there's
a podcast dedicated to what comes out every Friday called newly released or something like that, or just released, something like that.
Yeah, I can't even hope to keep track of it all. But anywho, so just starting out, just up front, for those of you that are listening, we're not going to cover the stuff in Catalina or the new Mac Pro that was released. We'll do that in the subsequent episode, which we hope to have out very, very quickly. But we're just going to focus on the portables for this episode, because really that's where a lot of the most interesting things were anyway. So
the new iPod Touch, right?
Who can believe, you know, that wasn't even a part of WWDC. I was so shocked to see that Apple dropped the new iPod Touch. But I think that is really geared toward kids who want an iPhone but don't want the subsequent phone bill to go along with it. So I think they should keep that thing alive for as long as they possibly can. It's just an iPhone without the cellular technology. Why wouldn't you? But that's neither here nor there. So iOS 13. Man, we have got so many goodies that are coming in iOS 13, starting with dark mode. Are you guys excited about dark mode?
Definitely excited about that. You know, the whole thing where you wake up and look at your phone in the night because you can't sleep or whatever, and you're blinded by whatever white screen shows up at first.
Yeah, that's going to be really nice. I thought the way they presented it at WWDC was neat with the team, as they went from, you know, normal developer-looking fellas to the goth room. That was kind of neat. You know, they're kind of poking fun at themselves. That was good. And exactly what Brad said. I mean, I'd sit in the bed at night and probably look at my phone a lot more than I should, so that'll be nice.
One reason why I use Reddit in its dark mode already.
Any app that has a dark mode I've been using for years in that configuration, Fantastical comes to mind too, just because I don't want to see that. Telegram's another one where I use it in dark mode, you know, Overcast, all of those things. There's been such a clamor. I would have rather seen them do this than Night Shift. Like, this would have been a smarter thing to do. It would have been lower hanging fruit, you would have to think. One of the weirdest things for me, and of course Apple Music is now going to be in, you know, at a dark mode too, is sometimes if I get up super early in the morning or I'm driving to go see my family, you know, hundreds of miles away, I like to leave before the sun comes up. I like to leave when it's still dark, when traffic is light, because I have a long drive and it takes a while to get out of the Atlanta metro area. if I use Apple Music without this before this feature exists, it is blinding how much it just washes the entire car and that white light, and it's really distracting. It's terrible. So I know that's a weird edge use case, but my goodness, that's one of the reasons I hate, well, I know it sounds weird, but that's one of the reasons I kind of prefer Spotify's interface to Apple Music, among several, but that not blinding you is a nice one.
Yeah, it's like your music comes with an added bonus of as you're going down the road, you know.
It's like somebody put a music app inside the flashlight app is what it ends up being for me. Like, it's a front-facing flashlight of just overwhelming whiteness, which I know white is Apple's motif. That's what they've been associated with. Look at the AirPods. Look at the old iPod. You know, I get it, but
the power cable.
Yeah, all the cables that go along with it. Yeah, that's a good point. Let's see. So Reminders seems to be getting some intelligence and tries to predict things by using on-device machine learning, tries to be predictive based on things you've done before. So you guys all are like me. I use Todoist. I think you guys use Todo or Do or one of those.
I use Things.
That's right.
Use AnyList.
So none of us use the stock app when it comes to, even though when I'm using Things, you know, some of those things will integrate with Reminders and keep them there so that they're accessible via Siri and those types of things, that we don't actually use that interface. So it looks nice. It looks like it's better. I think I'm going to give it a shot just to see. I would love to use default apps wherever I could. And I hope it gets a lot better than what it's been. But it looked kind of interesting. I noticed that Apple Maps had some improvements. But what did you guys think about the announcements with Apple Maps? Because really, aside from Street View, I don't understand how we're 7 years into this and it seems largely uninteresting.
I don't really know what they could announce from Maps that would convince me to switch from Waze to Maps. I mean, I do. That's just where I'm there. You know, that's what I use. It's the kind of thing where you've got to get used to an app and know that it's going to do the right things for you. And so it requires almost like a trial or a personal, you know, like a POC, proof of concept that this is going to work for me. I just haven't been willing to give it the time to do that.
What about you, Brad? What would it take to make you want to actually use it? Because I have some thoughts on this.
I mean, some more crowdsourcing ability, sort of like Waze, you know, if they wanted to Sherlock one more thing, it would be some more functionality like Waze. I mean, the whole thing where they showed you the difference between sort of the side-by-side between the maps of them out driving and using more LiDAR and whatnot to sort of map the shapes of buildings, not just where the sort of like a topo map where just where the streets go and all that, you know, to give you more of a 3D look or more detail when you do like a 3D look on your map. That's cool. But it's not enough to make me switch. You know, I need some more intelligence in there than just more detailed maps.
It doesn't matter how the map looks. How about that? I mean, to me, the directions and the path that it gives you to your destination are the most important part of a Maps app. It can look great, but if it, you know, if it takes me through traffic, then, you know, I don't care what it looks like.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, if you look at Waze's interface, the maps in Waze are garish and cartoony. Like, they're terrible. Like, they're not good at all. And no one uses it for that, I wouldn't think. I find myself using Google Maps more in the car than I actually do Waze these days, even though I've always been a huge Waze fan. Really, what I want is one thing that Google Maps does that none of the others do is if you're just in your car driving, and you don't have a destination put in. Sometimes I'll do this with Google Maps. I can see by glancing at the map how busy or congested the streets are. If it's red, if it's green. So if I'm going in a route that I would normally always take, like I don't have to put in my route every single time that I get in the car. And that's what Waze kind of wants you to do before it gives you that information. I can just sort of glance and see, hey, it looks like there's an accident in the way that I would normally take. I'll just take something else. That would be really nice. But also being able to report things. I had a situation about a year ago where I went way, way out of my way to get this really cool iced coffee that I had heard about, nitro cold brew. So I'm driving, it was like 15 miles away, which for me is a long haul, and there was a road closure on my way back. I couldn't get on the interstate. Nothing but Waze would let me report that that was a thing and then route me around it. Apple Maps was convinced this is the way that you go. There is no other way that you can go. Even Google Maps at the time was like, you have to go this way. Waze was the only one that would let me tell it. With that data being so dynamic, until the day comes where we get dynamic crowdsourcing in that app, it'll be like a who cares type of thing to me, which is kind of sad.
Well, you know, there's the other people on the road that use only the built-in app, or they just know Google Maps because of some other phone or device they had, and they are, you know, they come over from Android over to iPhone, and they're like, well, I know Google Maps, I'll keep using Google Maps. And the, again, you don't have, like you said, that dynamic data or even the sharing between the three, what we'll call databases, the three map sources, just because it's sort of siloed off.
Indeed.
The only time I find myself using Apple Maps is if I'm walking. I mean, I've used it walking before because it is.
Same here.
It you know, it'll do that tap on your wrist, and that's nice when you're walking. We were in Chicago Memorial Day weekend, and I used Apple Maps a whole lot that weekend because we were walking everywhere we were going, and it worked just fine. But in the car, no.
Which is, you know, honestly, the walking directions is one place that Apple Maps really shines, at least for the watchOS integration. So if you had Google Maps that could do it, that would probably be fine too. But I use that a lot for the same reason. But you can't get that wrong. Like traffic congestion, being rerouted, things like that, that doesn't really happen in walking directions all that often.
Exactly.
So
get me going in the right direction and tell me when to turn. You know, yeah, that's pretty simple.
The bar is a lot lower in those cases. But yeah, that's kind of nice. So HomeKit is offering secure video uploads now where you can encrypt and upload video from doorbells and things like that into iCloud. And apparently HomeKit's also coming to routers so that you can firewall off accessories. So the secure video, I think, is kind of interesting, but it's going to take vendor support before this is a thing where it's, you know, Ring is owned by Amazon. Nest is owned by Google. Those are the most prominent doorbells. I don't even know of many of these doorbells that you can actually buy that anyone uses where this is a thing. So having cameras that could support it, great, but it's really going to need vendor support before that takes off. Though the HomeKit coming to routers seems kind of interesting. What do you guys think about that?
So wouldn't that be something that has to be supported as well? I mean, they kind of got to build it in.
Well, it'll just be software. You know, it'll be a change in somebody's software to pull in Apple's APIs, you know, to make it work. Because since Apple seems to publish everything through an API, I don't see myself switching away from Unify to pull this off. So, you know, Unify would have to jump on board with that. And Unify has so many other features that they really need to pull in. I don't see them doing this HomeKit integration anytime soon.
That was kind of my thought, Brad. That's why I was saying, you know, it still has to be supported. When they first started talking about this on the keynote, which I didn't watch the keynote until Friday night because I was out of town. And the first night I went to watch it, it wasn't posted yet. And then it was just a crazy week. And so finally, I just took, you know, a couple hours to kind of decompress Friday night and I watched it. And when they got to this part, I hadn't seen a whole lot about it yet. And I didn't quite understand what they were talking about until they got into it some more. And I guess it's a neat feature, but not using a doorbell camera, or I don't have any camera set up in the condo at this point, you know, it's not something that I was super excited about. I guess, you know, I can see where, you know, it's just Apple, one more thing where they're trying to, you know, protect your privacy versus other folks trying to exploit it.
Yeah, that's the thing too. I mean, we have all of this footage that's being recorded and stored, and it is kind of concerning. Like if you use Nest, you have the world's largest advertising company who's storing your footage, or you have Amazon who's primarily supposed to be just selling goods. So having a company whose focus is privacy and encryption and security is a nice thing. The router aspect, I know Linksys, I think Eero was another one that was mentioned, which is weird because they are owned by Amazon as well, but they do have some autonomy. And Spectrum was another company who had signed on to support the firewalling off of accessories via HomeKit. So that's kind of interesting too. That's sort of a big win for them. Something that looks really interesting too is now coming in iOS 13 is that you can have the HomePod and your AirPods, they can read incoming text messages and respond directly, which is huge. I have a friend who has a Echo, and one of the biggest things that she hates about the Echo is that, you know, if she's working and listening to music, she wants her text messages to come in and just be read and allow her to respond. And this is something that I don't think the other vendors have really prioritized, but it's nice to see that Apple's doing it. And not only that, other services will be available after the release of iOS 13. So there could be conceivably things like WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger or something like that where you could do the same thing. I think text messages is about the line of where I would draw it. Say if you text me and I'm listening to music, you know, read it out and let me respond. That would be better. But kind of like it does in the car, if you have CarPlay today, you'll get a little notification. You can tap on it and it'll read out the stuff, you know, straight ahead. So, and it looks like CarPlay will be getting this as well.
Well, hopefully they'll make it to where you can exclude, say, group chats or group texts from this, you know, because if you're in a real chatty group text and your mom and your sister and your dad are sitting there talking about something that you have no concern over, And then you're driving down the road and you're trying to listen to your song. And it's like, dad says this, your sister says this, your mom says this. And you're just like, that would really get annoying fast.
Here's what I hope, because I do this today. I'm on a lot of those, particularly with family and whatnot. And what I normally do in those situations is I will mute those threads so that I only see the notifications. But I hope you're right.
Just wait for the AI to kick in where it actually starts to try to describe pictures you get. So it'll be like, it's a meme, sir. And it's got words and letters and, you know, or, hey, you got a boob pic here.
See, that'll be kind of funny today. And, you know, sometimes you'll get that already with if you use CarPlay, where some you'll get so-and-so laughed at your message. So-and-so, you know, give an exclamation point where, you know.
But I just, you know, it can only go up from here. And I think it's a neat concept, but I definitely agree with both you and Brad that, you know, it's got to be able to pay attention to muted conversations or it's just going to get way out of hand.
Yeah, I definitely hope that's the case. But having the HomePod and being able to work hands-free and just, you know when things come in would be really good. So audio sharing by being in close proximity to another device or doing handoff via close proximity to a HomePod is going to be something that's there. And I know we've wanted handoff for a while. Jim, I'm sure you guys probably have some opinions on this. What do you think?
It's crazy that it's taken us this long to get this and that it still works. You know, I mean, I guess it'll work. Supposedly, you just bring your phone in the proximity to the HomePod, which is very cool. I mean, the use case there now is, let's say I'm listening to something in the car and I get home. And of course, it was streaming from my phone in the car. And if I want to continue listening to that at home, then, you know, let's say it's a podcast. So I walk in the house and I swipe my phone next to the HomePod, and then all of a sudden the podcast starts playing again over the HomePod. That use case is perfect. I mean, that is exactly the kind of thing. I mean, it's great for music too, if you're listening to something and you get home and you want to keep listening. But even more important to me, it's better for podcasts, because now, like, you know, you get in the house and, you know, I could, and right now I would put my AirPods in. So, you know, I'd put my AirPods in and start listening on that walking around. But if I could just walk up and basically say, you know, just swipe by the HomePod, you know, that's one step that they're in that direction that I've been able to do with Spotify and like on Apple devices or Amazon devices for a while, where Spotify will continue playing anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah, I don't know why they've done this in the way that they've done it. It seems like it's not the best way to implement it. So I'm sort of dying to see how that's going to go.
I don't know if I see myself really using it that much, because, you know, the first thing I do when I walk the house is, you know, got to say hello to the wife or the kids. And, you know, you just can't, I personally just can't pick up where I left off when I get out of the car. I mean, and one thing is, you know, I'm driving in the car. I can kind of sort of mindlessly pay attention to I can listen to the podcast and sort of mindlessly drive, in that my eyes are paying attention, but my brain can pay attention to the podcast. Whereas once I walk in, you know, I may have to help start dinner or whatever. It's, you know, my brain has to actually be active and thinking about something, you know, other than taking in this information from the podcast.
I just don't want to have to tap a device to do something to make it take over. You know what I mean? That's the part to me. I would rather you know, touch a button, which you can do with AirPlay, but it's not quite the same thing as you guys have with Spotify today.
Yeah, I mean, that Spotify, the way you can just play just about anywhere and continue right from where you left off, that is super nice. And it always shocked me that they got that so well. And Apple, who actually makes all the hardware, didn't or couldn't or whatever. You know, I mean, that's what shocked me, is you got all this different Apple hardware between Macs and HomePods and iPads and phones.
It's always an afterthought.
Yeah, we should totally have continuity with Apple Music there, where if I'm listening to an album on my phone, my iPad should know I was listening to that album on my phone. I mean, that just makes sense. I mean, we finally got messages synced, right, in iMessage. Why can't you sync what the hell I'm playing in music between devices?
I agree totally. It seems so weird to me. However, you know, that leads us, you know, with mention of Spotify, into the fact that Siri is now going to integrate with third-party services in both the car and the HomePod, it looks like. So the extent of that hasn't been announced. I know they didn't mention Spotify specifically, but I know iHeartRadio, Pandora, you can't imagine that it's not going to be. And that's one of the things that they're suing Apple about, is no access to Siri. So they could be potentially kneecapping a lawsuit by doing that. And it looks like Maps will be getting the same way as well. So you can tell Waze to do something, or Google Maps or something with Siri. So that to me is long overdue. This is something Apple should have done a long time ago.
I mean, do you think it's all this time Apple just hasn't had the ability to share it, or they're just being stodgy and keeping the keys to the kingdom?
I think that they've seen how far ahead Google and Amazon are getting with the integrations. So that's not a good thing for them. And until they did it, there's no benefit into trying to use that to lock people into your ecosystem. People already want to use your devices. Let them hook into other things if they have those. You can't pretend they don't exist. It was a very Microsoft early 2000s way of doing things to lock those things out. So just build the best product and people will use it. Build the default product and people will use it. But don't pretend like the other ones don't exist. And I think it was something they had no choice in doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think at first it was it's a feature of our apps that we can have that nobody else has, and that time has passed now. I mean, they need to make it available everywhere if they want people to continue using it. It needs to be more ubiquitous, you know, across all the apps on the phone, because like it or not, you know, there are a lot of apps on the phone that people use that aren't Apple apps.
Well, they don't always build the best thing. And acknowledging that they don't build the best thing and letting people have a solution in the interim is the smart thing to do. Like when they allowed CarPlay integration with Waze and Google Maps last fall, it doesn't take anything away from Maps. It just gives them some room to breathe and slowly build the product better instead of getting people frustrated at what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, it keeps people from using some of their apps, I think, you know, because it makes it easier to stay with the other. But, you know, they're still on an iPhone, and to me, that's the most important part for Apple.
Yeah, but you don't want them to defect, and you know at some point they will if they get frustrated enough. So doing stuff like this is enough to keep people in the fold, I think, and I'm sure glad that they're actually doing it. So a couple of other things that were really good was the voice control, so you can use a device completely hands-free, which looked awesome, and pointer support, which is also deemed as an accessibility feature, but oh my goodness. Now, gestures aren't supported, but hey, you can finally plug in a mouse. You can do a trackpad. That is huge.
I think I would use the pointer support every now and then with my iPad. I don't know. I think with the voice commands, you would have to turn that on, right? I mean, you couldn't keep it on all the time, so I don't know that I would use it that much.
Unless you were like paraplegic or something.
Yeah, I mean,
almost forced to leave it on all the time.
Yeah, I would be really happy it was there in that case if I was, you know, yeah, okay.
Yeah, if you think about it, using it just by voice before would be, well, I think quadriplegic would probably be the one that would benefit the most, but
I guess that's what I meant.
Yeah, I knew what you meant. But yeah, it's very difficult in that case. The pointer support, though, is kind of huge, because if you want to use it as a laptop, you're not constantly having to reach your hand up toward the screen, which I think just by supporting that, you're going to be a lot better off with using it as a sort of a laptop replacement if you wanted to. As much as it pains me to say that, it's just not natural to bring your hands from the keyboard up to the screen as much as you end up having to do.
On the iPad, I mean, I've kind of gotten used to that, where you're on the keyboard and then touching the screen, and on the keyboard and touching the screen. In fact, I found that when I'm using my iPad a whole lot, then when I get back on my Mac, sometimes I catch myself just about to touch the screen, and then I'm like, oh, nope, this is the Mac.
Yeah, I find myself doing that same thing too, and it's very annoying when you reach up to touch the screen and go, oh, wait a minute, this is terrible. But I'm glad the Mac doesn't have that, because I don't like that as an interface anyway. I don't like typing and reaching up and touching. I'd much rather the pointer support be in iOS than the other way around. Let's see. So Siri will be more natural sounding, with speech that is entirely generated by software, which I liked that in the demonstration, where it sounded less robotic and less artificial.
Yeah, that was very cool.
Yeah, that's going to be useful.
And Reality Kit, with aka AR Kit 3, with photorealistic rendering and motion capture, looked really, really cool. You can even generate things behind people. So, you know, I haven't made as much use out of AR Kit as I thought I might, and, you know, in its first two iterations, and it's very powerful as it is today. So I don't know how...
The demos for that during WWDC were pretty neat. I agree with you. I haven't used it as much, and you know, I haven't seen it benefit that much, but it demos very well. How about that?
That's been the way I felt about ARKit for a while now, is that it does demo very well, but I don't think a lot of developers are really taking advantage of it. There's the IKEA app, there's Magic Plan, there's a few games, but I want to see more things take advantage of it. Let's see, some of the things that didn't get a lot of attention. The volume heads-up display no longer takes over the entire screen, which is great. How many times have you gone to take a screenshot, barely touch the volume button, it turns up, and your screenshot is completely blurred out by the volume up? I hate that so much. You can also delete apps from the update screen. So if you're in the app screen for updates, you just sort of push left on the app, swipe left, and you'll get a delete dialog and you can delete it. How many times you go in and got an app update for something, you're like, I don't even use this crap anymore. And then you have to go hunt it down. So that's, again, kind of a nice thing that's there.
Yeah, I hadn't heard about that. That seems neat. I would definitely use that because I've been there before. Like, where did I get that?
It's long overdue.
Oh, way overdue. Also, non-destructive photo and video editing, which is nice because sometimes today I will load a picture or something into Pixelmator and go into it and edit it that way and then copy the resulting edit back into Photos. And now you don't necessarily have to do that. So that's good. You can have a duplicate copy of a picture. Speaking of which, Photos, you know, it's going to be able to automatically rotate your videos, which is nice. Again, not having to move it to a PC and do that on do it through VLC or Premiere or something like that. And AI is supposed to reduce duplicates and clutter, which, again, one of those things like, why is it taking this long to have this? It kind of feels like this is the year of, you know, 12 was a stability year, was a rebuilding year. 12 was a stability year, but 13 seems to be things that I have to kind of wonder if this stuff has been sitting around since iOS 11. They're just now doing it because, man, some of this stuff is just such low-hanging
fruit. Some of this is like the duh.
Yeah, like, why did this not exist before? I'm kind of excited about the CarPlay interfaces. I don't know how that's going to end up playing in my own vehicle, but most of the interfaces for CarPlay and a lot of existing vehicles is kind of like an iPad-shaped screen where it's still kind of a 4x3 rather than a 16x9. And a lot of the newer displays are 16x9. So in the newer displays, it's going to look great. Not really sure having multiple things on the screen or how that's going to end up looking. But one of the things that, if I understand this correctly, is that CarPlay will no longer mirror your phone. So you can have something open on CarPlay and not have it open on your phone. That was what I understood. I don't know that for certain. I'll try to put on a beta this summer and see if that's the case, because if so, thank God, that's way beyond time too. I don't like listening to Overcast, needing to look at a map, wanting to skip through a commercial. Now I have to take my watch and skip through commercials if I have a map up. Let's say I'm in my car listening to podcasts and I'm navigating somewhere. If I want to skip through a commercial break, I usually just bring up my watch and hit the skip button so that I don't have to go into the phone, you know, hit Overcast or whatever, or go to the CarPlay interface and do it. And what a mess. So yeah, this will be better, even though I think I'm the only one that uses CarPlay on the show right now.
The buttons on my steering wheel will skip through commercials, so do you not do that? Or,
you know, that's a good point. I probably have it on there. I have not used it. So one of the cheats that I've always done, because apparently CarPlay is supposed to get Siri support. My car has had Siri support forever. Whenever I just say the words, my car answers. But I also have a voice button on my car that I use to invoke Siri, so I use that a lot. I'm sure the skip stuff may already be there. I may need to look at that. That would be a great oopsie on me if I overlooked that, so...
Well, you know, in Overcast, like if you're listening to music, you know, the next will skip to the next song. But if you're listening to Overcast or another podcast app and you have it set to, say, skip 30 seconds, it'll do that. It won't actually skip to the next episode of the podcast.
I'll have to try
that. At least that's how it works in my vehicle.
That's one of the things that's bad about vehicles, too, is that every interface is different and all the buttons are different. But yeah, I'll have to
Very much so, yeah.
That button functionality is the same in my vehicle and my wife's vehicle as far as what the buttons do on that's actually on the steering wheel. So I think as far as the electronics go, it should be the same. And, you know, she has Android Auto in her Honda, whereas I just have a Toyota radio. Mine's not any kind of special, you know, embedded OS.
In my 15-year-old car, I use my watch. Like you said, Brian, I actually just raise up my watch and that's how I've forward, or that's how I change tracks more on my watch than on the radio interface. So I've got a Pioneer installed in the Honda, and I use my watch.
It's such a terrible hack, but it's completely legal here in Georgia. You can use smartwatches while you drive and it's okay, which seems to me like worse than using a phone. But as long as I'm not breaking the law, I've armed my home alarm using my watch before when I'm driving because I'm not legally supposed to touch my phone, which is also kind of a God, I just need something that integrates with Siri so I can arm and disarm my alarm with that. But
I've activated my phone or my watch with my nose before, like reach up and tap it to my nose.
I have totally done that. I've actually, for me, now that the Series 4, when you raise it, will do what it's supposed to do, I don't have to do that near as much. But if I have to hit OK on a UI, I've absolutely used my nose before. One of the things that I don't like, every once in a while, my wife and I will take my dog out for a walk. And as we leave, I will raise my wrist and I'll, you know, tell it to start a workout. I mean, a walking outdoor walk or whatever, it'll do it. But then I'll immediately raise my wrist and tell it to close the garage door. And it always misses the close part. It just says the garage door. And it goes, yes, Brian, you have a garage door and it is open. It's like, you know, honestly, things like that, I wish they would fix. Like if I just say that, why wouldn't it say, would you like to open or close it or something like that? Instead of just being like, yes, you know, you have a garage door. Well, thank you, Siri. I had no idea until you told me.
I think Amazon Assistant will do that. If it can't pick up, it'll at least say, oh, you have this, you know, do you want to do something with it? You know, it actually is smart enough to prompt you back with an additional question about your, you know, what you're doing.
Like it thinks I just want to have a conversation about a door that exists. That's great. Speaking of watchOS, let's talk about watchOS 6. So not a lot of new changes, but some important changes are going to be in there. So
come on, not a lot of changes. We're getting an app store.
That's just what I was about to say. So the two big things, the training wheels are finally starting to come off of the watch. And you know that that's the case because you're getting an independent app store, which also means that if you have an app, it can exist in the watchOS app store. It means that it doesn't have to be a corresponding iPhone app. So for every single app that you have on your watch today under watchOS 5 or earlier, it was impossible to install just a standalone watch app. Everything had a watch component of an existing iOS app. And it looks like with watchOS 6, that's going to start to change. So it's starting to diverge and become its own independent device is what we can take from this.
As a little aside, I've been unable to install apps on my watch lately. They just kind of hang. And even if they do say they finally installed, if I go try to run them on my watch, they just kind of start up and shut down. So I think that's on my to-do list for today is to blow my watch away and restart it back up because I can't get apps to install. I don't know what has happened. What had happened, I don't know.
Hopefully you haven't Bluetooth killed it like most of your mutant superpower hasn't destroyed your watch.
I haven't had that problem lately. I've been doing pretty good. The new AirPods are much improved as far as switching devices. Like before, it was just such a pain in the butt to get like, okay, it's connected to your phone, but I want it to connect to my Mac or I want it to connect to my iPad. And before, it was so hard to get it to like realize that I wanted to change. Now it still might take like 10 seconds, but at least I know if I go to my iPad and I say connect to the AirPods, it'll kind of bounce and do its thing or whatever. But then all of a sudden, you know, there they are. They're connected to the iPad and disconnected from the phone. So at least it's smart enough to do that now. And I do that a lot when I'm working because I'll connect my AirPods to my Mac for a conference call or we use BlueJeans video service. And so I, you know, will connect there and do that, and Brian's giving me a frowny face on the BlueJeans. It's okay. It's better than using Teams, I think. So anyway, at least my Bluetooth, I'm going to knock on my desk here, but my Bluetooth issues seem to be pretty well resolved now.
Fantastic. So we're also getting audiobooks, calculator, and voice memos on the watch, and I could have sworn all of those things existed today, particularly calculator. How do you have a watch without calculator built in? How is that even a thing that I had a calculator watch being a colossal dork in high school, all the way back to elementary school. We're talking 30 plus years ago. I had a calculator watch, my Apple Watch, $800 or whatever, and I can't even get a calculator on it until the fourth iteration. It'll be the fifth by the time it comes out.
Well, I've been using pCalc on mine, but I didn't realize that there wasn't a default one either. All I want is when they give us the new watch faces, let the alarm clock be one of the damn complications.
Playing would be really good as well. That Now Playing is one that needs to come back. That again, it's one of their own things. How do you not have your own thing? Are you too good for your home? Okay. So we're also going to be getting full Siri searches on the Apple Watch, or at least closer to it, because we can now display web results. Nothing is worse than asking your watch a question. I can't get the answer to that here. Okay, well, you're useless, because you know what? I think Google could. I think Amazon could. Come on, get with the program, Apple. And we're also going to get a noise app to let you know if you're in a hearing-damaging environment, which I guess is good if you're not old like us and already had your hearing probably damaged from concerts, music, earphones, all types of things like that.
Working in industrial environments.
That too.
Your car from 10th through 12th grade.
We're also getting an overhaul to the activity tracking on the Apple Watch, which is kind of neat. But again, have you guys muted me on your Apple Watches for the activities and workouts and stuff? Did I finally bury you guys in data? Because I've had to mute people who did that to me in the past. So I won't be offended if I have.
I haven't muted you, but I guess you just, you know, once or twice a day is not, you know, overtly interruptive.
Ah, okay. So it's not as bad as it used to be.
You know, it's just basically if you complete all your rings, I get that. Or sometimes, I don't know if I always get them if you complete a workout or if it's just the big workouts. I don't know. But yeah, it's not too annoying there.
Fantastic. Yesterday was the first day I've taken off in probably over a month or so of not closing in all the rings. I just decided to just sort of take it easy. And that it felt weird, but I needed a recovery day after as much as I've been doing.
Related to the watch, Brian, have you worked out with any equipment that integrates with the watch yet? Remember, that was like either last year or the year before last. They said we're going to have equipment that's actually made to work with Apple Watch. Have you come across any of that equipment yet?
I don't think that I have. It's called Gym Kit, and they've actually made additional changes that weren't talked about at WWDC, where they're adding more manufacturers in. Now, what I've noticed, I do cardio every single day, at least 30 minutes, usually 45, sometimes an hour, and I'm fond of a certain, I forget the manufacturer, it's Life something or other for the ellipticals that I like to use. And I've noticed that if you don't grip the handles, of course, it doesn't give you your heart rate. But I've noticed that when I'm working out, occasionally I will actually see my correct heart rate. And I'm one of those people, I make like a running motion sometimes on the elliptical. I don't hold the handles at all. I use the elliptical because it helps my knees. Like, it doesn't hurt my knees, so I can kind of like run in place for a certain amount of time. I've noticed that my heart rate will appear on there, and I'll glance down at my Apple Watch, and it's the same one that's on my Apple Watch, and I'm not touching anything. So I may be using something that supports it, and I don't realize it. I don't think that I have, and that's kind of unfortunate. I'm a big fan of LA Fitness, and I go to several in the area. I don't use the same one all the time. I have one that I'm kind of loyal to, but I'll use others too. And so far, there's only one that I've noticed where that's the case. I want to see more of those get supported because it is a nice thing to have. But again, you know, with gym equipment and a lot of these places where you have memberships, they don't upgrade the equipment all the time. So usually when that stuff wears out and they get new ones, you'll normally see it. If I do any more traveling this year, I'm gonna keep a lookout for it. But yeah, it's a nice thing. But I'm assuming that may be the case because I don't know how else they would be getting my heart rate.
Cool. I was just wondering because, I mean, I'm not a frequenter to the gym. So, you know, I haven't seen many. I went to a spin class with a colleague in St. Louis a couple weeks ago, and it was one of the craziest, worst things of my life.
Now, you want to talk about something cool. I'm sitting there doing my thing, and it's like, Jim has completed a workout. Now, every time I get data from you guys, I check it to see. Because, again, being somebody who's trying to be fanatical with his workouts, I like to see what you guys do when things come across. And I noticed this was like at night or something weird during the week when I figured Jim was traveling, and he had just hauled ass. Like, I was like, what did he do? And that's why I ended up texting you, like, what is this? Was this an accident? Were you dragged by a bus? What happened? How did you get?
It was surely an accident because, oh, my God. It lasted like 40, 45 minutes, and 5 minutes into the ride, I couldn't stand up on the bike. It was just like my legs were already rubber after that long because, you know, they bolt you in. So I'm used to riding my bike, but I'm not used to being bolted into the pedals. So it was craziness. Yeah. And my buddy from work is 58 and he just kicks butt. And I'm just like, you know, more power to you, dude, because it was, you know, he was riding and keeping up with everybody in the class.
That is amazing. That is really cool. I will pass the spin class at my gym as I'm going up to do my cardio, and much respect to anybody who can last through one of the, because I do it every single day for like months at a pop, and I would never be able to hang with those guys that are doing the spin stuff at all. So that I know that is incredibly tough. Let's see. One of the things that we didn't talk about in iOS 13, because I was about to move on to iPadOS, is Apple is finally doing its own swipe keyboard, which I put a lot of expletives in the show notes of it's about time.
That's the one piece that really makes me want to go to the beta like immediately, but I'm not going to do it. But that is like the one thing that is just, well, that and dark mode. Those two things are like why I really want to go to the beta, but I think I'm going to wait at least until the public release next month.
Yeah, I think what I'm going to do, we're going to go on a Caribbean cruise at the end of July, and I think after we get back, which should be sometime like the first week of August, that's when I'll probably put the betas on because I don't want to be in international waters with limited internet and no way to unscrew my phone. And I don't want to have to, you know, take a backup or bring my laptop or something crazy like that to be able to do it. But yeah, I'm dying for that very reason. But the reason I mention that is that now that iOS has forked in for, you know, iPads into iPadOS, So we're going to see deviations between the two, right? An iPad has always been a big iPhone, you know, even from its very first iteration, you know, almost. Can you believe the iPad has existed for like, what, 8 years now? It's been 8 years that we've had an iPad. And because it came out in 2011, I believe it was. Or was it 2010? No, I think it was 2010, actually. I think we're 9 years into it at this point, I want to say.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts because it was right after, I think it was January of 2010 when they first announced it. But yeah, it's, you know, we're almost a decade into this device, and it was time. It's been past time for this thing to diverge, right? We should have had this a while ago.
Yep.
And one of the reasons I mentioned the swipe keyboard is that in this new iPad OS, if you're using that swipe keyboard, it will minimize into a phone-sized keyboard in the corner of the iPad. I've used Google's swipe keyboard for a while. It's adequate, but a lot of times it sucks. If I type the word "the," for example, 9 times out of 10, actually, you know what? I'll say 10 times out of 10. It says "thy," T-H-Y, like I'm speaking in old English. Let me send you to thy. No, it's "the." How do you not know "the," Google? It happens a lot where it makes these little silly mistakes, and I'm hoping that Apple's keyboard will at least be a little bit smarter. But if you use it on the iPad, it's worthless because swiping on the iPad, I mean, you're doing these grand sweeping gestures with your hand like you're conducting a symphony. You might as well not even have the thing, right? It's nigh useless. So when I saw this in the keynote, I'm like, oh, this is brilliant. This should have already been a thing that existed. And for those of us that used to use the Microsoft keyboard before it got discontinued when they bought Swipe, you used to get that one-handed mode on the phone. This is like one-handed mode, but for the iPad. It is something that's a big duh. Like, why didn't this exist before? But I guess I shouldn't question it too much.
Yeah, I mean, the iPad had the split keyboard for a while there, and I don't even know if that's still in there. I haven't tried to use it. It used to have that split keyboard where you could have like half and half on each side. But I don't even know if that's part of on iPads anymore.
I think it's still there.
If you are going to be typing one-handed on an iPad, though, it's going to be in the corner of the screen. It's going to be with your thumb. Like, it only makes sense to do that. So that's,
oh, yeah. Well, this was still a two-handed. It just split, you know, the keyboard down the middle to both sides to where you could, you know, reach the keys a little better.
Sort of like the old Microsoft Natural keyboard or whatever that was called. That yeah. split down the middle.
As Jim holds up his keyboard from a couple weeks ago. Yeah, that's definitely something that's nice. Also, the use of widgets on the home screen. So one of the big problems that the iPad has always had is that it had copious amounts of white space. Like it was a neighborhood with houses that were way far apart with huge palatial yards. It was so, from a UI point of view, ugly, such wasted real estate.
Especially on the big one.
Oh, yeah.
12.9. On the 12.9. On my 11, it's not as obvious, but it's still there. But on that 12.9, it's just like, you got like three icons on a 27-inch screen.
That's exactly what it feels like. So it's smart for them to make use of that and actually put useful information. If you're not going to be able to remap it or make the white space smaller, put something up there that would be useful. So that's a nice thing. In the also should have existed years ago section, we're going to have built-in SMB file sharing. We have support for thumb drives, external disks, SD cards, and direct import of photos into third-party photo apps. This is, if ever there was a finally moment, this is one of those. You can do compression on files. You can zip and unzip files. Hey, it's like it's a real computer.
Hey, Brian, it might finally be iPad Pro time.
It might actually. This is enough to really sort of, if I don't buy the existing one, I can damn sure tell you that when the new model comes out, I will, because I'm going to be putting the iPad OS beta, and I won't even wait for the public betas on that one. I still have the developer stuff, so I'll go in and probably put iPad OS, this latest iteration, on my iPad just to see what it's like. I'm a lot more loosey-goosey when it comes with the iPad. Like, I can tolerate crashes and problems, and it's usually plugged in most of the time, so if it's a battery hog or it gets a little hot, I won't necessarily care as much. But having the...
Are you like me, where with your phone, it's your primary work and home device? Like, you don't have a separate work phone? Yeah.
Correct. And I depend on it too much to have it flake out and be... And normally, I'll break down and still put betas on it in the summer, but I usually have to wait for it to be a little bit further along. I think we used to say on previous shows every year, is like, beta 4 is a good point where you can go ahead and put it on, because normally, between 4 to 6 betas is all you're going to get before the final release. So it's mostly well baked by that point, but yeah, if I had no job, I would probably put the beta on there and breathe a little easier. But depending on, because I'm on the phone all day for work, and I don't make those calls through my computer, I make it through my phone. So having that will definitely be something that I need that to be stable. But the iPad I have a little more leeway with, so I'll probably do that. So having the file support, very, very good. Having a download manager in Safari, I mean, this is slowly turning into a desktop OS, but different. Sandboxed from the beginning, so it doesn't feel like a compromise. It feels like this is how it is. So
you don't feel like features are just wedged in.
Correct. And having desktop class browsing on Safari where you're going to get the actual full desktop, that's a huge thing that I'm very excited about that.
This arrived just in time for me because the project I'm on now, we've got separate company-issued laptops from that company that we have to do all of our work on. And so right now I've been traveling with a 11-inch iPad, a 15-inch MacBook Pro, and a Lenovo ThinkPad all in my backpack. That'll make it a lot easier to basically leave my 15-inch MacBook Pro at home and not worry about it being here.
So why...
Jim also travels with a back brace.
And a weight belt or whatever. So I got to ask you, though, if you're traveling and you have the work laptop and you have your iPad, what purpose does your actual MacBook serve during... Was it just the web pages?
Well, right now, there's certain software that I run on Windows on my MacBook Pro that I don't have on my work computer. But now that we're about to start the actual true development, we've been in assessment for the last month or so. Now that we're actually about to start development, I don't think I'll need it. But right now there's just a couple of things that I have on mine that I use. So that's it. Yeah. Hopefully I'll be able to leave the MacBook Pro at home, starting 2 weeks from now. So
fair enough. Fair enough. Let's see. What else do we have? We have custom fonts you can now put on iPadOS. Text editing is now a swipe gesture, which the demonstration of that was pretty good, being able to use two fingers to cut and three fingers to paste. That makes it a lot less clunky.
I thought it was really funny when they said, no more shaking your iPad to undo.
How many times?
You've got this big iPad and, you know, you can see, you know,
treating it like an old school Etch-a-Sketch for those of us that are over 40. So that
exactly. That was pretty good. That was a good one-liner from Craig.
Yeah, that was kind of nice. And the guy doing the iPad demonstration he was not comfortable doing presentations. He even said oopsie at one point, and he was a little less polished than the others, but you know what? We'll give him a pass. It's got to be terrible. App expose we're getting. So we can do side-by-side versions of apps now that are independent of one another. So having like two versions of Notes or two versions of Word or two versions of Safari. Well, Safari thing I think was actually possible before, but that's going to be a nice thing.
Yeah, I definitely with Word, it's one of the places where I've really wanted it to be able to have two Word documents open at the same time to go back and forth and reference or cut and paste, because I've done some of that on my iPad. It's going to be real interesting. I mean, it is truly going to be a new power user platform where if you really learn the tools that are there, you're going to be able to just, you know, do a lot of crazy stuff. But it is a lot new to learn just from a standpoint of, you know, how do you make this do what you want versus your Mac? Because it really is a different paradigm as far as, you know, the swiping and the pulling to the right or pulling to the left and the different gestures. I mean, it's going to be a true power user thing where if you get it down, it's there. But, you know, most people you're going to see with an iPad Pro are still going to, you know, operate it just like it's a big iPhone.
I liked how Craig, when he was doing the Word demo, he said it's downright enterprise-y.
Yeah, he had a couple of good one-liners. Craig's really coming to his own.
Air Force One.
He's definitely my favorite to watch.
Yeah, he has the most charisma and personality out of all those guys. But yeah, that's definitely something I see myself in the future of. I could see a future where when I travel, I leave the MacBook Pro for work at home, connected to the internet, where I go back to it with Parallels Access or something like that if I absolutely need to. But if I have Slack, if I have, you know, Prompt, if I have Outlook, I have Word and all these docs, I mean, all the Office suite on there, I don't really need. And if I have pointer support and it's cellular to boot, I really don't see a need to take my laptop anywhere if I can just get to the, if I can remote into my MacBook Pro for those rare edge cases that I need it.
Oh, come on. You give Brad and Brian Prompt and that's all they really need. They'd be happy all day long.
I do use it quite a bit. It is nice to be able to SSH.
I do love Prompt. I will sit there at a red light and shell into somebody's firewall and make a change when they call me at 7:30 in the morning because they can't get to something.
Hardcore nerd right there, man. Much respect on that one. So
I at least know how to SSH now. I can't say it, but I can do it. So I do it at least like once a month to upgrade my pie hole.
I like that. I like that we're all on the pie hole. So let's see. Just going through all of the features. Hang on one second. Sorry about this. One second. All right, I'm back. So just to run down a few of the features, you know, we're coming up toward the end of the show, and I want to make sure that we get we cover some of this. There's a lot of features in iOS 13 that didn't get a lot of time, but you can now select Wi-Fi in the control center, which is cool.
Been waiting for this for a long time.
That's another, how did it not exist for the longest time?
Exactly. One of the things, I was just looking over at the notes, and I don't know if we mentioned it earlier and I just missed it, but we talked a little bit about the HomePod reading text messages and stuff, but that's also available from AirPods as well. So,
oh, yeah, we mentioned that as well. So okay. AirPods.
I was HomePods thinking both. From just the HomePod, but from the AirPods, I can see where that would be super useful without ever having to take your phone out of your pocket, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Even though I don't do it near as much as I used to when I would be traveling, you know, oftentimes I'm wandering through an airport and I have my, you know, AirPods in, and being able to not pull out the phone just to do basic, because again, you text, hey, I landed, or hey, I'll be there in a few minutes, those types of things, and getting responses back. This is going to be a really useful feature, I think.
It's going to be people walking around, like, just talking to themselves, and people are going to be like, that person's crazy.
Or, well, that's already been around since the Bluetooth headset, so.
Yeah. I thought another funny moment in the keynote was when they were showing the little Memojis, like, putting on their makeup and stuff, and they threw in their AirPods there at the end. Like, you could put AirPods on your Memoji. I was like, all right, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, that was kind of nice, too. That was something I almost put in the show notes for us to discuss, but since I take, whenever I send someone, if someone, I send a selfie at all, there's always AirPods in the picture because I'm always wearing them at home, like,
oh,
all of it.
One of the things that I thought was very cool that, again, why it hadn't existed before, you can now set, like, your own avatar for iMessage that somebody on the other end will get when they get a message from you, instead of just having, you know, like, if I have Brian in my contacts and it, you know, it's just, you know, all I see is BB
2000.
Instead of, you know, or an old photo that I happen to, you know, crop you into, you know, you could actually send somebody, you know, actually have an avatar for iMessage. And I think it, the way it sounded, it, you might be able to use it for other things as well, but at least for iMessage, that's super useful. 'Cause I know I'll get text messages randomly, from people I work with, and I have them in my contacts, but I don't have a picture for everybody I work with in my phone. And so, you know, if sometimes I get something and maybe I don't have their contact information in my phone, it would be really nice to be able to, you know, instantly know who that is. And so that's exciting. I think that's going to be super useful.
Oh, yeah.
If everybody will actually set their avatars.
I know only nerds like us probably will at first, but I definitely will. Let's see. So low data mode is going to be in iOS 13. So if you're on a capped data plan, you can squeeze out a few more bytes out of that. Not really something I think affects any of us, but it is. I know plenty of people who still have non-unlimited data plans, so that'll be good for them. The option to download large apps over cellular. My God, why did this take so long? Nothing is worse than going to update something. You can't update this until you're on a Wi-Fi network. And you can make a Wi-Fi hotspot out of your other device and do it just fine. Like, just give me the, let me, stop it. You're not my real dad. Let me do what I want to do.
It's just trying to protect you, Brian. Like when I set up that phone new that time and somehow, or not new, but I restored my phone and it ended up downloading like 70 gigs of pictures over my cellular and blowing my plan out the water. It was the first month of the current phone. It was last year, and yeah, it downloaded like 70 gigs of photos, and I blew my plan out the water, and for the rest of the month, I was on, you know, data restrictions.
So the best way that should have worked is the way that, you know how iCloud will show you something on your phone, but you don't actually have it until you touch it to go look at it, and then it pulls it? That's what it should have done in your case. But yes, I agree. Let's see, Dolby Atmos playback. So this doesn't seem like something that it would be a big deal on an iPhone or an iPad, but let me give you a little scenario. I'm in love with my Dolby Atmos soundbar that we got in 2017. I know Jim and I have the same soundbar. When you watch stuff that takes advantage of it, and if you've calibrated it properly for your in your room, it is phenomenal. I was watching the first John Wick when he's at his wife's funeral and he's talking to Willem Dafoe. It sounds like it's raining in the room. I had that House on Haunted Hill from Netflix. I think the sixth episode, there was rain. That effect sounds like, I had to actually stop and look around. Like, is it raining outside or is that just the show?
Is the roof leaking?
Yes, I was a little nervous, especially since I was in the basement and could hear it.
John Wick 1 is the best sounding thing I've played on that soundbar. I just bought 1 and 2 here recently and watched 1. It was vibrating the whole condo in certain parts of that movie. I mean, it sounded amazing. I mean, I was just shocked. It's definitely the best one I've witnessed on there with the Atmos and the everything built in. Yeah. I was just, you know, and it's a sound bar. It's literally a sound bar and a subwoofer. No separate speakers, no monitors up front, no monitors in the back. I mean, it's super simple setup, and it sounds great.
It does. For $1,500, it better sound phenomenal. But yes, it is really good. Like, I'll be watching a movie in the basement, and my wife can be two floors up, and she's like, oh, he's watching a movie again. I feel bad for my neighbors, because I'm pretty sure even they can hear it when I'm down there with, like, Marvel movies going in the with the full Atmos and everything. But the reason it's so cool, a couple months ago, just as a fun thing when I was bored, I looked at getting some Dolby Atmos headphones because I really like the sound bar. But like, what about when I travel? Because when I travel, especially for work, I don't go out and, you know, drink and do all this other stuff. I'll sit in my room and probably watch movies or TV or catch up on stuff that I wouldn't, you know, it's a great time to get caught up on stuff where I can just sort of like tune out the world while I'm traveling. But I like that Dolby Atmos so much, and they make Dolby Atmos headphones. Well, none of the movies and TV shows on the iPad or iPhone took advantage of it. Like, you couldn't just, you couldn't do that. And it's like, what is the deal with this? So I guess now that support is coming to the iPad and to iOS, I can go and get some headphones when that comes out, and I can enjoy that same immersive experience. Or what if, you know, sometimes my wife and I work different schedules. I don't want to be blaring something at 6 a.m. of, I don't want to be watching John Wick in the morning and, you know, have it sound like there's a three-dimensional gunfight going on in the basement. So having a pair of headphones that I could have used would have been a nice thing. So that's really kind of cool. I'm kind of excited about it, even though it's a very much an edge case feature.
Yeah, it's Brian be traveling with three sets of headphones. He's got the noise-canceling ones for the plane, the AirPods for all-time use, and then the Atmos headphones just for laying in the room and watching some iTunes movies.
If you look up the definition of extra in the dictionary, it would be me and my headphones and me and my robot shoes. Yes, that would be. Which, by the way, Nike did replace my shoes, so I'm very happy about that. And they did start working again as I was in the driveway waiting for FedEx to drop off the new ones, but I don't care. I'm sending them back. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Still features to get through. Bluetooth wireless splitter. So you'll be able to use two pairs of AirPods on a single iOS device. That's kind of nice, I guess.
It just reminds me of riding the school bus when I was in seventh grade, and I had one of those splitters so that me and whoever I was sitting with on the school bus could both listen to, you know, whatever I was listening to on my Walkman. Or even the kids now, you know, I remember when we bought them like a little DVD player to watch in the car. I mean, this is when they were little, and we'd have two pairs of headphones.
I think this would be super useful on the airplane where, let's say, I've got my big iPad and I pull it out, and my girlfriend are watching a movie. Now we can actually both connect to the iPad and watch a movie on my iPad. Instead, I know a couple of years back, I was on a flight. We were watching something, I think The Crown or something. And so it was like I shared an AirPod. So it was like each of us had one and we're watching The Crown on a flight. So, so I can definitely see where, you know, that's the use case there that I can see for myself that seems pretty neat.
This is one of those features I won't get a lot out of because my wife and I have 0% overlapping interests in anything. She won't listen to my music. She won't watch my TV shows. She won't watch my movies for the most part. So I will get zero usage out of this. It's a long story. Don't even ask. that's a story for another episode.
That sounds like something for a relationship podcast, not a Apple podcast.
Just me, myself, and I will be listening to whatever I listen to.
Sex and money, maybe. That's for that show.
FaceTime and iMessage on dual SIM. So apparently, you know, we got dual SIM support last fall. None of us are actually using it. I've considered, there's a couple of places I've been. There's a remote area of Texas I go to every once in a while where only AT&T works, where I've considered, you know, using this potentially in the future. And it looks like with that implementation of dual SIM, you had to pick one number or the other for FaceTime and iMessage, which makes it kind of useless if you think about it, right? I mean, if I switch from one carrier to the other, I still want my FaceTime and my, especially iMessage, to be able to work. People send you texts. That's the whole point. So now that's actually going to work. So you can actually use both numbers for that. And that's kind of nice. Let's see. You're going to be able to silence unknown callers. So that's something that should have been in there forever ago. If there's a number I don't know, send it directly to voicemail. What else? Trying to see what looks really cool. Independent CarPlay app views. We talked about that. Light mode in CarPlay. So, okay, this is I don't know what kind of psychopath would use this, but CarPlay in most cars, I guess, is all dark. It's had dark mode forever. Everything is a dark screen inside of CarPlay. So I guess you're going to get the option for a white screen in CarPlay. I don't know who would use that, but I guess somebody will. Glare in a vehicle is always a problem. So I like darker displays other than lighter displays myself, but that's just me. And you're going to have the ability to report a problem in maps a little bit easier. Again, something that would have made the product great, I don't know, 7 years ago when it was introduced. We're going to be able to use Siri shortcuts and home automations for those of us, I guess just me, who like Siri shortcuts. That's going to be great. Conversational Siri shortcuts. So it's, you know, I didn't know you couldn't do that today because I've created a few that seem, you know, normal to me, but what else? Siri event suggestions from third-party apps and Siri suggestions in Apple Podcasts are going to be kind of neat, I guess. And now you can also add attachments to events in Calendar, which I didn't know you couldn't do before. I guess I'm so enveloped in the world of Outlook and Office 365, where you can put attachments in a calendar event. I didn't know you couldn't do that in Apple before, so that's a little bit weird. Any of those new features strike your fancy, guys?
I just really think I should use Siri more for more stuff, right?
We've been saying that for like 3 years of nearly 100 episodes of podcasting. We have been saying that. I don't know.
I just use my watch as a watch. I don't
know how you don't. Like, seriously, honest to God. Now that I've put the HomePod on the main floor and I'm here a lot, I am constantly send my wife, I'll be playing a game or reading something or just sitting on the couch staring up at the ceiling and just yell out, send my wife a text message, add this to the shopping list, do blah, 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 blah.
Seriously.
That should be the name of the episode. We may just do that. But yes, you should use it more. Do a raise your watch to your face and, you know, send a text message or do a home. Well, I guess you're not doing the home automation. Home automation stuff's the most that I do with starting a workout. I look like an idiot when I do it, but I still will raise my watch to my face and say, start an elliptical workout when I'm on the elliptical. So I'm trying not to use the terrible, the app interface on the watch, which I wish would go away completely. But let's see. So before we go, was there anything else that we needed to do? I guess we'll save it for next time, but we're going to talk about the death of iTunes, I suppose, when we talk about the macOS changes and the new Mac Pro. So we'll probably save that for next time.
And that new Mac Pro, boy, isn't that sexy.
And we'll also talk about Apple's Find My feature, which again could go into iOS, but we'll save it for the macOS portion because I think we've been going over an hour now, so that's good.
Hey, Find My feature. That's pretty much what they did for this WDC. All these new features that we thought might have already existed or should have existed, and now they do.
You know, one thing we do need to talk about before we go is single sign-on with Apple. And this is another, why did this take so long to exist? You know, I guess it's a good thing that we're seeing all this stuff get implemented, but even for us diehard faithfuls, seeing this stuff really makes me wonder why it didn't exist before. I've always hated the sign-in with Facebook, the sign-in with Google, simply because, let's say you decide to get off of Facebook. You would, if you were using that to sign into a service, you've lost that ability. Same with Google. I've seen people who have lost their Google accounts, and it's not like there's anybody you can call and get that fixed. You know, it could happen. It's unlikely. It doesn't happen all that often. But why would you want to even run the risk of something that the loss of that one thing could cut you off from other services? So I've never really liked that. With Apple, you have a business relationship and then you're paying the money. You're probably not going to lose that service. So having the ability to do a single sign-on with Apple is very, very good. This is something that, seriously, this should have been around 10 years ago. Like, this should have been something.
I avoid that like the plague. If something only offers me those two options, sign in with Facebook, sign in with Google, I don't use the service. I mean, that's just.
Spotify did that for the longest time.
I don't have Facebook at all. And I do have, you know, multiple Google accounts from over the years, but still, I no thanks.
I would be inclined to actually use this with Apple because two reasons. One, I would trust Apple, but part of the other reason that I would do it is that they demonstrated it automatically generates random emails for when it does these sorts of sign-ins. So third parties won't actually have actually have your real email address. And if you start getting spam from those emails, you can disable them and pick a new one. I mean, that alone, holy crap. This is why did you guys wait so long to do this? So I could definitely see myself using the sign-in with Apple because I also don't, I'm probably not going to leave that ecosystem. I'm easily over 10 years in, thousands upon thousands of dollars invested, not really going anywhere on a humbug.
Yeah, I could definitely see myself switching over to that or using that for new services going forward. The custom email thing is, that's just so Apple right now. They're trying to throw everything in the face they can to Facebook and Google primarily, but anybody that's basically in the, you know, sell the user as a, you know, as your product kind of business.
Google's starting to do, of course, at their developer conference last month, they started talking about doing more things on device and trying to make some overtures toward privacy. But where I think Apple has the advantage is that Google doesn't control their hardware on which their operating system runs. So being able to have adequate hardware that's up to the task of being able to do these things, it's going to be a much more uneven experience on Android. Whereas with Apple, every phone that supports the version of the OS is pretty overpowered for the most case. You get into iPhone 7, 8, and later, these are not underpowered devices, right? They can do a lot of the on-device processing. So having things where a lot of stuff happens on device, for example, and not having to go out to the cloud, that was a smart move. I see this as a very big win for Apple of having this. And again, think about it from a keychain perspective or a from a 1Password perspective. You always have your phone with you. It has to authenticate usually off your face or your fingerprint. It's, you know, it's cryptographically strong. So if you lose your device, no one's going to. It's what I'm getting at is single sign-on with Apple has a lot going for it for being more secure than coming up even with a randomly generated password. If I have biometrics that I have to use for every website, oh my God, that would be great. Like there's a much lower chance that you're going to have compromise there, I think. If it's strong enough that I can trust my credit card with it and I haven't had my credit card compromised based off of that same level of encryption, then I would probably trust that more than passwords, I guess.
It's definitely more secure than, doing like two-factor through your cell number simply because there's the whole thing with cloning
or hijacking
your SIM
it outright.
And, you know, or more, it's more convenient using biometrics than it is having to open like the Authy app or the Google authentication app on your phone to get a code that you have to type in and add, you know, a
few
extra seconds.
Is probably the coolest thing that they've announced, and it's probably not as big a deal to most people who see it, but it has long-reaching implications, so I'm very excited about it. Well, we have packed a lot of talking in about this. We didn't even get to tvOS, so let's do that really quick. tvOS has multi-user support. That's going to be nice, finally overdue for those of you who share your Apple TV with other people, and you'll get individualized recommendations as a result of that. But what I'm most happy about is the effect that you can use Xbox and PlayStation 4 controllers on not only your tvOS, but also it will be supported in iOS as well. I don't know if that was clear or iPadOS, but yeah, that's going to be the case too. Now, I wouldn't play it on the iPhone, but hey, on the iPad, that would be, you know, it's kind of nice. I don't have to use a SteelSeries controller anymore. That's probably the death of SteelSeries right there.
Yeah, or I mean, they'll still be able to make, Xbox and PS4 controllers, but not dedicated iOS controllers.
And everybody who's going to be using the arcade feature probably already has an Xbox One or a PS4 anyway.
True that. I hadn't thought about that. I've got an Xbox controller downstairs. It's probably got dust on it. So
exactly. So yeah, I'm very excited about that. Let's just hope that the arcade lives up to the hype. So I'm thinking this is probably a good place for us to stop until the next episode, in which case we will cover macOS, the Mac Pro, and anything that we didn't get to today. So you guys have anything before we close that you want to go ahead and mention?
I was just going to say, if you haven't watched the keynote, I know it's over 2 hours, but there, you know, some good lines in it. They cover a lot of stuff pretty in depth. And it's a good watch if you're an Apple fan, just kind of sit down with your popcorn. You know, Craig is up on the stage, I think, most of the time, as far as, you know, doing the segues. There's some pretty neat demos. Yeah, take some time and fire up that keynote on your Apple TV, watch it on the big screen, and I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Agreed. Or you can always watch one of the recap videos that does it in 9 minutes or whatever, which is also good, too, if you don't have the attention span, or just watch it at 2 speed inside of YouTube. That's always good, too. Well, I guess that should do it for this week. We're going to have out another episode to follow this up, hopefully sometime this week. Well, that should do it, and later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.